If you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. If you do read it, you're misinformed. What is the long-term effect of too much information?
Information, information, I just need some information. I've been dying, is it lack of education? I've been reading without any transformation. I'm addicted, is it overstimulation? Hey.
Welcome to The Sixth Sense Report. The Sixth Sense Report.
Hear ye, hear ye, come one, come all. You are listening to The Sixth Sense Report with Darnell Samuels and
Joel Nikoloff.
Today, we got a really cool episode for you guys. So, Joel, imagine smoking weed in the streets without cops harass. Imagine going to court with no trial.
Going to court with no trial is a little interesting. Sounds very like lock me up without a trial and statement, but I don't think that's where you're going with it.
No. We're talking about the legalization of marijuana in Ontario or in Canada, July 1st, 2018. So we're going to unpack that and look at it from the perspective of what the results may be.
Well, on July 1st, you know, I'll be celebrating Canada Day. Apparently a bunch of people will be celebrating it in a new way.
Well, okay. Huffington Post released a really cool article on good questions people should be asking. It was by Sarah E. Lemon. The first question is, who will be legally able to access marijuana once the law passes? This will come down to a matter of age. While the federal government has set the minimum legal age for buying marijuana products at 18, provinces will have some degree of discretion. They will have the option to raise it if they'd like.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, most provinces will probably follow what they do for alcohol. But I mean, I could be wrong. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Ontario is doing that. They'll be doing 19.
I think the heart of the question is they're trying, well, the kids, right? And The government is trying to say, okay, look, we want to make marijuana accessible and kind of take the stigma away from it, but at the same time, not make it appealing to kids. Because during the process, they were really looking at, okay, well, let's look at packaging so it doesn't become more enticing to kids, right? So they're trying to protect the young people from wanting to start smoking. Or not start smoking, but drawing them closer to it.
Well, and I think you're also trying to make sure the people who are deciding to do things that are mind-altering or just altering your state are doing it with sound mind, right? Like I would presume the same concept around drinking, right? Like as a child, you generally just chase fun and pleasure, like, you know, with the exception of like, I do what I have to do because my parents say so for the most part. I mean, some children are the exception, but you know, as soon as you're done your responsibilities, it's okay, I'm going to go play. I'm going to go have fun. And so I think there's a level of limiting exposure to making decisions that might have long-term impacts. And I mean, the really interesting thing about children smoking marijuana, there is some stuff out there around if you have a predisposition to schizophrenia, mm-hmm. because of the potential for paranoia, mm-hmm. You can actually kind of trigger it through smoking.
I know somebody that's a couple people that's happened to. But to me, you know, when you think back to when we were kids, we were rolling with guys who've been smoking from time. You know what I mean? And, you know, kids aren't stupid. They know how to get their Wiz Khalifa on, right? They know the difference between grandma's medicinal cannabis and that sticky, icky, icky. Oh, wait, put it in the air. They know the difference. So I think it's foolish to presume like kids don't know how to get it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we live in I remember going through high school and like there was at least one kid almost in every class who was sitting there stoned.
Right. Maybe more than one. Right, chances are they all left on, you know, on break together.
Right.
All they all show up to class late. I wonder why.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, that was, you know, 15 years ago when, or more than that almost. And when it was even more illegal, is a weird term, but, you know, before the decriminalization, you know, the youth were able to get it from the black market. I mean, I don't necessarily see it changing. Mm-hmm. That the youth, I mean, what I find really interesting about the age of 18 as their, or 19 as their cutoff, there's, you know, there's stuff out there about using marijuana with the developing brain, and even before the age of, you know, 25 is argued as potentially detrimental. I think we have a real lack of information because of the severity of how illegal it was in the US, and that might sound like a weird term, but it's because it was deemed a Schedule I drug, which meant there was no medical benefit and therefore impossible. And obviously, figuratively speaking, almost technically impossible, though, to study it. To do a study on it was extremely difficult because it was deemed to have no medical benefit. So therefore, even getting it under a license to study it medicinally or pharmaceutically or whatever you want to use in trials of any sort was essentially impossible for almost the last 100 years. And so our level of information around it is lacking in complete comparison to other, you know, let's call them black market drugs that aren't Schedule I, that you would be like, oh wait, you know, that's considered less severe than marijuana.
Right. Right. Okay. So the next question is, where will consumers be able to legally purchase marijuana? More likely than not, our province will adopt a mixed model approach. This will be similar to our current approach with alcohol. It will involve both private marijuana sales and the government-run stores. Under this model, there is reason to believe that marijuana products may be sold in government liquor stores and private beer and wine stores, as well as in existing dispensaries and pharmacies.
So, obviously, listeners should note the article we're reading from is out of BC. So that's the model that BC is adopting, which is pretty much the idea that across Canada, every province has the own ability to set the ways that they will implement the distribution. And in essence, I would presume that almost every province will adopt, again, a similar alcohol distribution. So Ontario is planning to do, you know, I've been calling it the CCBO option. I don't know if that's the actual term they'll be using, but it fits for now with the level right. of I have no idea what's going on, and sounds like neither do they.
Right. Okay. So then the next question is, how will the dispensaries obtain their product? At this point, most dispensaries get their supplies from illegal sources. Although illegal, many of these producers have been around for decades. As a result, they have built up a great deal of goodwill. As legalization approaches, the question is whether those illegal sources will continue to survive.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting, you know, I think we're going to see a really interesting experiment in Canada with the, you know, just let's just contrast BC versus Ontario, mm-hmm. right? In BC, where you've got a mixed model, you're essentially trying to leverage the pre-existing infrastructure, in addition to providing your own government-created infrastructure, mm-hmm. And so probably stop filling the gaps, kind of like how if you're driving through the boonies of Ontario, all of a sudden you see an LCBO in the middle of nowhere that kind of covers a wide area. Obviously, in the illegal, you know, drug market today, you're not going to see a dispensary in the middle of nowhere. You're probably just having your run-of-the-mill street dealer, mm-hmm. Let's call it, that's servicing their clients. So I think it's interesting because Ontario's adoption is
take, yeah, I mean, there's, I don't know, if anyone's traveled around downtown Toronto, there's dispensaries everywhere. It right. seems like they're getting shut down and opened up all the time.
Right.
Probably because of the level of ambiguity, the severity of the consequences of running an operation right now, probably aren't that high, in such that the risk is worth the benefit. I mean, it's insane. How many like open up, shut down, like name changes, and you're like, oh, I walked by that a couple of days ago and it was something else.
Right, right. But it's funny because the question is there, like, it's the question is saying dispensaries, who are they getting their drugs from? Or sorry,
marijuana.
Their marijuana from. And usually those people who they're getting from are illegal because they're not going through the channel of the government to become legal. So for the average neighborhood drug dealer, will they, you know, opt to say, okay, you know what, let me get my paperwork right so I can do this legally? I don't think that's going to happen. I really think that the black market is going to thrive. And what I mean by black market, I mean by business done apart from, you know, government supervision. I think they will thrive. Because, you know, part of it is like, the heart of the issue is this. The government's monetizing it, and they're trying to make money off of it, monetizing it. But then they're also trying to control the substance, right? And yeah. and how much THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, is in it, right?
Yeah, the psychoactive, main psychoactive
ingredient. Yes, but this is the key question. What if a man just wants to get nice? What if he just wants to get high? You know what I mean? And whatever's in the dispensary isn't good enough. But you know, Ice Pick down the street has the nicest, you know, has the nicest weed. So you're gonna go to Ice Pick. And Ice Pick's always gonna have his customers. Cause he's been doing it from time.
Well, I mean, you know, you're raising, or you're kind of pointing to an interesting question around, like, and this is what I was trying to get at, was that I think the success of the black market in provinces like Ontario, where basically, you know, the idea is like, they're going to create their own stores, right? It's not, literally Ontario is like, it's not going to be sold in the same stores as alcohol, probably because that prevents the grocery store distribution side of things. Maybe not. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But it would make sense. But the funny thing is, like, in Ontario, there's going to be 40 standalone stores open by July 2018 when they make it legal. And the plan is a year later, it'll be double that at 80 and 150 stores open by 2020. And I'm just getting this off Ontario's .ca's webpage, cannabis legalization. I think there's probably more than 40 dispensaries in the GTA right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm maybe not quite, but. But if you're talking about Ontario as a whole, you're not going to box out the black market, to say the least, when you only have 40 stores. Mm-hmm. So you're actually leaving room for the black market, I would think. Mm-hmm. The other question then becomes, like, to your point around, you know, getting the nice stuff, to use more technical terms, like, let's you know, I would say that with the increased amount of regulation, with the policies and procedure that I'm assuming the regulation that's going to come with the producer, the cost to produce product will go up because of all the things that you're going to have to follow. When your product doesn't meet a certain standard, you're going to have to throw it away. And so those are increased costs. And so just looking at the burden of regulation and the fact that now, guess what, you're buying it from a unionized employee at the CCBO, versus a guy who's invested in making profit and he does it on his own time.
And customer service matters.
Yeah. I'm expecting the lowest quality customer service at the CCBO because they're not going to hire the guy who's been in the industry for the last 20 years and he's covered in tats. Like, right. You know, there's, look at the LCB, you know, the LCBO, who's in there. But I mean, I wouldn't say the customer service is bad, but they're good at telling you where the product is. Not what the product is, mm-hmm. right? So I, you know, coming back to what I was trying to say about the technical terms, I would foresee that if you contrast the products that are currently in the black market
and that will stay in the black market post this legalization, you're going to see higher quality product in the black market at the same price as the other product in the the legal market, mm-hmm. just because it's going to cost more to produce. Mm-hmm. Now, is there a bunch of people that will never go to the black market? Sure. And I would say most likely those are people that are entering who've never smoked marijuana because it's illegal. I'm not going to do it. No brainer. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to, I have to protect my family. I got to protect my job. I don't want to, I can't have a criminal record. All of these reasons that they just default to, oh, maybe when I go to Amsterdam, I'll smoke attitude. Right. That would now be willing to, oh, LCBO, okay, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to try it out. The funny thing is, like, in the new scenario, possession of marijuana is at no point going to be illegal. It's only the distribution. So as long as I can walk away from my illegal drug dealer without, being surveilled, and even if I am, oh, look, I just have possession. Mm-hmm. Like, prove to me that I didn't buy this at the LCBO. We're going to make me walk around with a receipt to say that I got this at the CCBO. Like, essentially, as a possession, you have zero risk. And so as a consumer, you're going to go where you can achieve your means most efficiently with the least amount of risk. Mm-hmm. So if it's cheaper in the black market and you're getting better quality product in the black market, and you have no risk because your buddy's coming over to your house and he's sitting in your room and you don't have to worry about being tapped. Mm-hmm. Or, if that guy's being followed, like, he's mm-hmm. in trouble. What are they going to do to me? Mm-hmm. I would assume is most people's attitude, especially considering they've already been doing this for the last 20 years.
Right. Yeah. And it bothers me. Honestly, if I could keep it 600 with you, I feel like with the legalization, it kind of course takes the stigma away, but what about those guys who've been locked up for selling it? That's what kind of gets me, because I know guys who have charges on them right now because of it, and now that it's cool or legal, it's acceptable. So I'm wondering, will pardons be granted to those guys who've incurred charges from it in the past?
I would presume that the only way you're getting pardoned is if it's somehow you have a criminal record related to possession. Because in essence, after the law changes, it's still illegal if you're not a licensed producer or distributor or whatever the, regulations are going to deem.
Right.
But it's a really interesting question, because you're looking at the amount, the significant impact to people's lives mm-hmm. when they've got a criminal record.
Right.
For something that now we consider to be no longer illegal.
Right.
Are we saying that we made a mistake in making it illegal in the past?
Right. And then it comes, the question of morality comes in. Because I know, like, especially as a Christian, there's a stigma attached to drug use or marijuana per se, and now it's like you're really asking the question, like, what does that do for us? Do we change our morality because the law changes? I have friends who smoke. Shoot, there's guys in who CLS Bible study who still smoke, but the issue was more so, well, yo, D, I smoke because I have anxiety, depression, health issues. And the medication that they're giving me, the side effects are much more worse than the side effects of smoking weed. So I opt to smoke weed because it's healthier for me than taking the drugs that the doctor gives me. You see what I'm saying? So at that point, you're kind of like, well, yes, okay, fine. The Bible says in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 12, verse 12 to 20 about not bringing harm to your body, but it's another situation when it's a health issue that you're struggling with and you need to take medication to help you, or for some people to cope. And that's why and I think that's one of the hearts of the issue that we don't want to miss, is that, okay, well, why are people smoking in general? Well, mm-hmm. for some people, they're smoking to cope. with whether it's physical pain or psychological pain, right? Because like Styles P said it best, I rather roll something up because I just might flip, grab a clip and hold something up. I get it, right? I get it. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Sometimes you need to, you know, ease your mind. So at this point, you're kind of like, okay, well.
What's the morality?
Well, for a lot of people, they're going to have to really find better ways to cope. Because once the doors are open, people are saying, are they going to say, okay, well, I guess it's okay. And this is a good way to cope, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting, I mean, I think coping is a very interesting aspect of this, because like, especially when you're talking the mental side of things, right? Like, cause my mind instantly goes to like, well, yeah, people cope with alcohol, and you know, the majority of people who cope with alcohol end up in a place where they gotta, you know, figure it out because it's going down a rabbit hole that's not good. Now, obviously I'm sure, you know, if you come home and have a beer and that's coping, I mean, probably more of just like a routine of how you relax, as a little different than like coming home and having a 2-4. But you know, I think you mentioned about, you know, the medication that they're taking has way bigger impacts. Like, I mean, I know, just look at the NFL as a conversation piece, the opioid, you know, painkiller scenario versus marijuana. Like, you know, it's technically illegal in the NFL, but really, they know, like, there's a lot of players that literally their body is in such agony. This is a way for their body to relax and not have crazy, crazy addictive / you know, just general side effects of the painkillers.
Yeah, right. Well, that's so true, because Al Harrington, a former NBA player, he just got into the business of farming marijuana, and he had a sit down conversation with former president of the NBA, David Stern, and they were talking about marijuana. And possibly, like, he asked David, like, yo, like, could we reconsider
the policy
that we have in the NBA? And he was like, well, yeah, the way how things are going now, because Al Harrington was saying when he was hurt, the best thing that helped him was the marijuana than the drugs that was being given to him. And so he was like, okay, well, if this stuff actually helps us get better, he's like, yeah, he's like, I'm sure there's tons of guys smoking it, just, you know, just under the radar. But it's just one of those things where everybody, not just, you know, people in Ontario, but even in the sports leagues, are going to have to reconsider what this means. Because, I mean, smoking weed isn't really a performance-enhancing drug.
Yeah, I mean, remember when the good old Canadian snowboarder got busted for having like super micro amount because he had smoked like the night before at a party, but technically claimed it was residue from months before. But he almost lost his gold medal in the snowboarding competition. Like, this was like, oh man, I want to say like 2004. Maybe I'm getting the years wrong for the Winter Olympics, but it was like, you know, Ross Rebogatti or whatever. Almost lost his medal because he got popped, but then they realized, oh wait, it's not actually an illegal,
right?
You know, performance enhancing from the Olympic Committee.
Oh really? Okay. You know, you see how it goes. Another concern that people are having is more so along the lines of the fallout. And
what do you mean?
In regards to drugging and driving.
Oh,
right. So there's a lot of different ways that this can go once it goes legal. So part of what they're saying is, okay, with the taxing that they do get off of the marijuana, the government will put it towards the judicial system in regards to expediting some of these cases when they come to trial, right?
Yeah, I mean, the I don't know, I actually shared this video on Facebook not too long ago, where essentially, they don't have a drug test. They don't have a breathalyzer.
Right, they don't.
They have literally no ability to confirm 100% whether you are driving stoned. Mm-hmm. So whether, I mean, you can do a field sobriety test, but, you know, if you're trying to say like, well, okay, you pass, like, and this can happen with alcohol. You can pass the field sobriety test, but you fail the blood alcohol test. with marijuana, dude, it's insane. They literally have people trained to pick up on moving clues, like, oh, your eyes are twitching or this is happening. And like the video I shared a couple days ago was literally three people had got wrongfully convicted. They went and took a blood test, a urine test, all the things, like immediately after, proved that they were completely negative, like no residue. And the good thing about for them, marijuana stays in your system for a long time. So it's not like, I mean, I know a little bit about this, but like, for example, cocaine comes out of your system like within, like, I want to say it's like 24 hours. Maybe it's a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I was to go do a blood test and a pee test that week, 5 days later, I could come up negative, but it's not actually meaningful because it's out of my system. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, I remember reading some stuff like where apparently marijuana can be in your system for like a couple months. Mm-hmm. So these people essentially got proven innocent, but the people who actually charged them and convicted them actually said, like, didn't deny the fact that what they did was wrong. They actually were like, no, everything we did was right. Like, even though they're basically saying that the blood and the pee tests were wrong, that their, you know, subjective tests, mm-hmm, of reading people's behavior is what's more valuable than an objective test.
Right. Okay, it's interesting. Okay, so I have a question for you. July 1st, 2018. Are you smoking?
As I said, Canada Day. Now that I got a new baby, I'm probably be doing something with the fam, so that's not going to be on my schedule.
Okay.
How about you? What you doing for Canada Day?
Honestly, Joel, the only thing I'll be rolling up is a curry goat roti, paratha skin from Drupati's. Or Alima's. That's it. And that's my 2 cents.
That's my 2 cents. So hit us up with your 2 cents. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, slash 6 cents report. All words, no numbers. Or shoot us an email, 6centsreport@gmail.com.
Yeah, we really want to hear from you guys.
Whether you want to email us some or Facebook or Twitter, you know, words, but feel free to record yourself. Obviously, try to keep it a higher quality so we could potentially put it on the air. And
be honest, and be truthful. If you think Joel is a jerk, then say that.
Yeah, no trolling.
Right? Just send something in. I will put you on the show. We'll make you famous.
Keep it short. You know, we don't need no monologues that we got to play on the air.
Yeah,
you know, something to use, we can use as a launching pad.
Yeah, anything longer than a minute, you start your own podcast.
But you heard me. Does that make sense?
I hear.